Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
Kellen and I have long stated that the economy is a reflection of everything Collapse. And, I've brought this up in recent episodes, the fact that sometimes what we see in the economy is not what's actually happening in the economy. And that's oftentimes the case. Because economies are man-made, they can be inflated. And this often happens through bubbles. You've seen in the past the dot-com bubble burst, the housing bubble in 2009, and experts are warning that we are currently in an AI bubble. A recent article that came out from techspot.com talks about how the AI bubble is the only thing keeping the U.S. economy together, according to the Dutch Bank. We'll talk through several articles here referencing the current economic situation throughout the world. And to start it off with this TechSpot article, the headline, or the subheadline says, "When the bubble bursts, reality will hit harder than anyone expects." Far harder than anyone expects. "You have been warned. Warnings about the overinflated prospects of a still hypothetical AI economy continue to mount. Some analysts expect the AI bubble to burst sooner rather than later, arguing that current investment growth cannot continue indefinitely in a finite world." You may recognize a piece of that quote. We can't grow infinitely on a finite planet. That's the whole theory around Collapse. The article says, according to a research note recently sent to clients by Deutsche Bank, the AI boom is currently helping the U.S. economy avoid a recession, but it cannot continue indefinitely. George Saravelos, global head of FX research at Deutsche Bank, said the U.S. would be close to a recession this year if big tech were not spending so heavily on building new AI data centers. Well, first of all, let me say that I think we can probably all agree that we're already close to a recession. It's been an argument over the last 18 months or so whether or not the recession has officially begun. But what he's saying here loudly rings true with kind of what the sentiment there is, I believe, that behind the scenes, we are in a recession. The numbers may not completely show that currently, and that is because of things like this, which are artificially propping it up. It goes on to say, "The AI machines are literally saving the U.S. economy right now, but this kind of growth cannot be sustained unless spending remains on an ever-growing course. NVIDIA, the major supplier of powerful AI accelerators used in data centers, could potentially bear much of the residual growth the U.S. economy has experienced in recent months. The bad news is that in order for the tech cycle to continue contributing to GDP growth, capital investment needs to remain parabolic. This is highly unlikely." There is a chart here which shows the underlying real GDP growth based on the total amount and then the amount if we exclude tech spending. And GDP growth is almost zero when you exclude the tech spending. All of this money is going towards AI technology. So on one side, it's the investment from retailers and businesses into new tech AI startups, many of which are failing to produce any growth in GDP. But you also have larger companies like NVIDIA, where GDP growth is happening, and they are, like it says here, propping up the whole thing. It says that around half of the market gains captured by the S&P 500 have been driven by tech-related stocks. A separate report notes that equity investors are dramatically overexposed to AI investments. By 2030, anticipated demand for AI services would require $2 trillion in annual revenues, leaving a shortfall of $800 billion globally to meet that demand. Later in the article, it talks about how recently NVIDIA committed $100 billion to OpenAI to build an additional 10 gigawatts of AI computing capacity, and OpenAI escalated the investment by planning a full network of new data centers. So I saw kind of an apt comment to this in the Collapse subreddit, which says, "The AI bubble is causing giant facilities that drain aquifers while making electricity unaffordable for the average American, all while eliminating jobs." And yeah, I mean, that's kind of a great way to look at it. We've got this bubble, which is holding up the economy, So if that bubble goes away, you know, we experience economic collapse, at least in the short term. Meanwhile, what's propping it up is the creation of these data centers and facilities, which are disproportionately affecting minority areas and places that already lack great water infrastructure or access. So areas already prone to drought are being made more vulnerable to it due to these data centers. It's increasing the cost of electricity because the demand is increasing so much, and at the same time, it's eliminating jobs. And it's been hard to get a solid number on what's happening with jobs due to AI. Just anecdotally, you know, my day job is working with small businesses around the world, particularly in Europe. And I've had conversations with people who, you know, their headcount at work has dropped by half due to the use of AI. One company I talked to says that they recruit, a big portion of their job is recruitment, and they have turned to AI recruiters and they let go many of their staff. And that resulted in hundreds of layoffs. It was half of the company size that it decreased by. And they don't plan to hire those people back. They now envision a stagnant headcount growth. And I think this same story is being repeated through many, many different companies around the world. So that kind of transitions into the conversation around labor markets. I have a couple different articles and things to discuss on that front here. There's an article in FX Empire, says China labor market struggles deepen, clouding economic outlook. China's jobless rate rose to 5.3% in August, with youth unemployment hitting 18.9%, the highest since December 2023. I'm not sure what happened in 2023, but having a 19% unemployment rate amongst youth is wild, and 5.3% overall is very high as well. Much of this is likely due to tariffs, as well as according to the article, the H-1B visa costs having gone up, which states that the visa rule could be another blow for more than 12 million Chinese university graduates entering the job market. You know, I'm not sure where we would be economically, for example, if Donald Trump had not won the presidency. This is affecting markets worldwide. This is one great case of that, talking about the China labor market. The policy coming out of the U.S. is affecting trade around the world. Now, we'd still have the issue with the pending AI bubble and those types of things. Not saying at all that the economy would be in a healthy place, but the intense tariffs, the uncertainty there, the restrictions on the H-1B visas, the increasing geopolitical tensions really spell trouble for the global economy. Meanwhile, in the U.S., due to the current government shutdown, which at the time of recording this has been going on for just a few days, I know that by the time this episode is released, it will be about a week or so that's passed. So I don't know what will have happened on this front in the meantime. But the jobs data is supposed to come out today, Friday, the 3rd of October. And the Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren has basically released a statement requesting that Donald Trump's administration still release that report despite the ongoing government shutdown. This is a monthly jobs report, usually published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, there's already been concerns that the data coming out is not truthful, that it's not accurate. Trump is firing the leader of this organization. I mean, has fired the leader and has basically shown that if the data doesn't show what he wants it to show, what's going to make him look good and feel good, then he will, you know, take retribution out on the leader of that organization. But there have been growing signs of weakness in the U.S. job market as well. Last month alone, there was an unexpected increase in jobless claims. And so receiving the data from this month is a necessary and important indicator of what direction we're headed. Part of this is, you know, in order to make policy decisions. The article, which is on MSN.com, says the shutdown is causing an information vacuum, derailing critical government data that investors, economists, CEOs, and Fed officials rely on to make decisions. In addition to the monthly BLS data on jobs and inflation, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, a federal agency housed inside the Commerce Department, said Wednesday it is required to suspend operations until Congress appropriates funding for this fiscal year. The suspension will prevent the release of BEA economic data scheduled to be released during the shutdown. That includes import and export data due on October 7th and potentially gross domestic product and inflation data due out at the end of October. A report released Wednesday by ADP found private sector payrolls unexpectedly plunged last month, suggesting softness in the job market continued into September. Warren said that Donald Trump has the power to make sure the federal government can continue producing and releasing this critical information on Friday and beyond during this shutdown. I think whether or not he does so will likely largely depend on what those numbers say. If we don't hear, if he refuses to release that information, I think we can assume the numbers are bad. And like I've mentioned so many times, one of the most frustrating aspects about this administration is just simply the manipulation and restriction of access to data, which is one of the most important things that we can view when we're trying to determine the state of the world and of collapse. Okay, another sign of pending economic issues. This is from Bloomberg, titled, "Millions of Student Loan Borrowers Still Aren't Making Payments. About a third of Americans with education debt are delinquent, according to the latest data." The actual number in the percentage is 29% of borrowers, which is 5.4 million people in the U.S., are delinquent on their loans, meaning they haven't made a payment in 90 days or more. And that was as of June. So here in October, a few months later, we're not sure where that number stands. Has it gone up or down? Economic trends probably means that it's gone down, though it did note that from the couple months prior to June, the number had decreased slightly as more people realized that they were delinquent. They said likely what happened was that people didn't know before that they were now required to make their payments, and so if they weren't on an auto pay, part of the reason they weren't paying is simply that they just didn't know that they had to. Those who don't make payments are subject to having it being held from wages through garnishment or tax refunds. Also noted that credit scores decrease on average by about 60 points from delinquency. And those with super prime credit scores above 781 points have seen decreases of more than 170 points to their credit due to not paying student loans.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
You know, I feel extremely lucky. My student loans are relatively low compared to many. I went to a relatively small school. I had a small scholarship that ended up paying like a quarter of my education. And just recently, my work announced that they were going to be making a contribution of $100 a month towards my student loans for 5 years, which was I'm very grateful for. That said, it's wild to me that I graduated nearly 15 years ago now, I guess more like 11 or 12 years ago, and I'm still making payments. Feels like I should have been done with this ages ago, and I recognize that in part this is due to, you know, the pause that was taken during 2020 and the years thereafter. It was simultaneously, I think, a blessing for many people, but it also made it hard because people learned to budget for several years around not having that expense. And so now all of a sudden that expense is added back in. Young people are increasingly finding it more difficult to get jobs out of college. And so those student loans become a burden, an even bigger burden. Another article talks about the rate at which people are getting priced out of home ownership. This one, this article is specifically regarding home ownership in the US, but I know that this is something that's happening all over the world. I had recently done an episode about fatalism in Australia, and I made mention of, you know, the disproportionately large number of listeners to this podcast that come out of Australia, and, you know, I was sort of questioning why that was, and somebody responded to me and talked about some of the issues that Australia is facing, and one of the main things that they mentioned was housing unaffordability. And it sounded very similar to what we're hearing in other places around the world. We've heard a lot about this in Canada, in the UK, and in the US. And this article sort of highlights what we're seeing in the US. Some of those numbers, and this is a Bloomberg article, by the way. It says the annual income needed to afford monthly payments on a median-priced home in the U.S. was $126,670 in 2024, which was a 60% jump from $79,330 in 2021. So essentially, in 3 years, it grew 60% from around $80,000 to around $127,000. That's the annual income needed to afford the monthly payments on a median-priced home. Meanwhile, the U.S. median household income was $80,000 in 2023, the most recent year for which that data is available, which was up just 1.3% from 3 years earlier. So while the salary needed to pay for a home has increased 60%, based on the most recent data, salaries only increased 1.3%, and they sit at the 2021 required salary of $80,000, nowhere near the 60% increase that's needed now in 2024. On top of that, it's found that renting is cheaper. On average, it's $908 per month cheaper to rent a home than buying one when all expenses are taken into account. And I'm sure this number could fluctuate greatly based on where you are and the situation and what the insurance rates are and all those, but on average, that's what they found. Property taxes increased 30 to 50% from 2019 through 2024. And insurance costs have increased an average of 74% since 2010. Meanwhile, many places in the nation, you know, mortgages and homes are uninsurable. Lastly, I'm just going to kind of breeze through this one. Food banks warn demand has reached crisis point in the UK. This is from the BBC. It says the number of people struggling with hunger has risen so much, food banks say they can barely cope. According to the latest Trestle Trust statistics, more than 14.1 million people in the UK went hungry in the last year because of poverty, up from 11.6 million in 2022. So that's something like a 30% increase in just 3 years. Dawn Stanford, Nourish's operation director, this is a charity there, said that it's a pretty depressing picture. We are facing the worst crisis since we started 13 years ago. I think we have seen a 37% increase in referrals this year. This comes from cost of living primarily, and donations are decreasing because of this. They say we are getting about 25% donated and we're having to purchase 75% to cover the referrals. All right. I could probably pull up 50 more articles released in the last month or two demonstrating economic issues around the world. Many people are not hanging on at all, while others, on the average, are probably hanging on just by a thread. An economic crash, an increase in joblessness could careen many people over the edge. This is something that we'll have to continue to keep a close eye on in the coming months and years, and we'll be sure to report more on it as more information comes in. Thanks a lot. See you soon. Thanks a lot. Tune back in tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.